We thank the participation of Mr. Ramirez. A second participation, we have the intervention of doctors Mariana Benitez and Alejandro Vázquez Arzola. Mariana is a researcher in the Institute of Ecology of National University of Mexico. Her area of research is agroecology. Agro-food system and ecology and evolutionary ecology. Alejandro is a researcher from the Physics Institute in the lab of micromanipulation with optics. He studies the interaction of light with particles, with microscopic particles. Doctors Benitez and Vázquez sent their participation with a video entitled Questions about the development of the technical basis and of communication for scientific work. Good day. We thank the invitation to participate in this Conciencias, and we're sorry we're not there in person, but we sent this presentation that Alejandro and I have made, and it has helped a lot in the discussion about an aspect of the science in Mexico which we think it's important and which worries us. It has to do with what we see in this image here. That is how in different areas of scientific work we use materials and equipments with different degrees of sophistication. Therefore, we see, for example, here on the left, a lab of a physics lab, of an optics lab, where we see lasers and equipment made of steel, which holds different optical pieces, lenses, mirrors. There's a table here, which allows to dampen oscillations so that we can make very precise work. In this lab here, which is more of a biology lab, we have different kinds of equipment and materials that we use to do different kinds of experiments, such as labs here, computing labs, in which we use other kinds of materials and equipment. Field work, as we see here, we can also use different materials to, for example, see pH, temperature, humidity, or different aspects of environment variables that we want to measure precisely and in a trusty way. As part of scientific doing, we also have to read a lot of research and papers. And those we also have to, we need to develop communication means and certain types of technology to communicate and diffuse these articles. So something that we have noticed with respect to all these materials and equipments that we see in this image is that all apparatus and materials are fabricated by a few companies in the world. And in general, we'll talk about these equipments and materials as the technical basis and communication basis, also when we talk about scientific papers, as the main topic of this participation. And with these technical bases, we refer to instruments, materials, equipment, software, literature, but also to the capability of using and repairing these equipments and materials. And something that we see with respect to these technical bases, that communication bases, is that there's a great dependency from foreign products that are always imported by our labs. And we see that this dependency is usually taken for granted, like it has always been like that. And we think that we should ask ourselves if Americans or Germans or Japanese people who fabricate these equipments are really more capable than us to make this kind of instruments, or if they're generously doing this for everybody and for the science of all the world. On the other hand, we also want to ask what are the implications of making cheaper things in China or Korea for some of these equipments or techniques, and what are the implications of the life of the workers that are producing this thing, the environment, the distribution of benefits of science. We see also that sometimes this dependency that we talk about in the sense that here in Mexico, in the labs where we work, where we use this equipment, we don't make this equipment here. Some people don't really understand how they are produced. And this dependency tends to be minimized in favor of pragmatism and just to try to get the cheapest equipment. It doesn't matter how, but we just have to publish things and do research. And the efforts that we put into reverting this situation are usually going against the current. But we see that this material basis and this technical basis of and of communication are very important. And it's important to think about this dependency that we mentioned. So what do we need this basis for? We think that they allow us not only solve practical problems in the lab, but also they allow us to pose problems and possible answers to them. Just because we have this access and we understand the workings, the detailed workings of the different equipments that we use. Also, it allows us, if we understand, to modify these equipments to tackle new problems and questions. It's important to note that the history of innovation, of theoretical innovations, which are very important in science, has been accompanied by technical innovations, instrument innovations, which allow us to open new perspectives. And it seems the distribution between science and technology is more of a fuzzy distinction. And when we maintain and reproduce this distinction, we lose a lot of the creative process and of the possibilities. We think that it's like comparing buying a painting from an artist, with painting a picture yourself. We think also that this dependency, this incapability to generate technical advancements ourselves, generates this miscomprehension of the methods and a lack of capacity to create new techniques and methods. And an undervalorization of what this implies. We think that this is not valued enough to the technical aspects of development of technical means in research. There's a separation in many universities between technicians and researchers. And the technicians are usually under the researchers who decide, who have more power of decision in a lab. But there's frequently no figure of a researcher technician. We see a difference between technical universities and non-technical universities, which are frequently also involved with class separation. And yeah, also there's a difference between practice and theory. On the other hand, although there is a discourse that tries to promote the scientific advancement in Mexico, there are also big labs that have been started with big technical capacities. However, we see that many times this corresponds to establishing very expensive labs, but not really understanding, making the equipment, repairing the equipment, or adapting them for our own necessities. So with respect to this, the importance in the interaction between theory and technique in the development of science, we'd like to take a quote from Pablo González Casanova, which is as follows. I quote, "Techno-science is a term that denotes science which is made with technique and technique made with science by researchers who are at the same time researchers and technicians, and who work in the most distinct levels of abstraction, taking different or the same ways to solve problems. Technoscience corresponds to interdisciplinary work by excellence." I finished the quote. And in this notion of interdisciplinary work, this is what we want to bring up. More than a theoretical analysis, what we want to do here is to retake some questions, cases, experiences of our own or nearby, which we think can be helpful to see what we need to develop as a community, as a scientific community, in order to do our own science, which is transforming our society. We won't talk about technique and technology in an industrial sense, which is often associated to progress and capitalist development, but to techniques which are associated to the process of knowledge generation in science. For this, we'll present some examples based in our own experience or in other experiences that we know, with the objective of making visible the problems with respect to the technical developments in our research fields, and to inspire new ways of generating this technical basis. The first example that we want to comment and share with you is of these posts and mattresses. These posts that we refer to are these pieces here, which are some stainless steel pieces that help for putting instruments in a diversity of research labs. In this case, this post is holding a lens, this post is holding a mirror, and they're useful for making very precise work in several aspects of physics. Although it looks simple, the fabrication of this post requires complying with very rigorous criteria. There is little room for variations in the measurements. They need to be compatible with other pieces. And you need a very meticulous work to elaborate this, very specific instruments and capacities. So these posts, we can buy them for approximately $100 in the U.S. You can order them from here to the U.S. They bring them from the U.S. Or you can fabricate them in the in the university labs like what we see here. The physics lab has a workshop where we can make this kind of post. However, the possibility of fabricating them here, there is the question if this is more expensive than buying them outside, and whether it's worth to devote resources to elaborate posts like these. We should mention that these posts are used in hundreds in institutes, as the Physics Institute of UNAM. So we ask ourselves, what is the real cost of making them here or buying them outside? And how does this cost change between the present time and in 10 years from now? If we would, for example, make these constantly here. We believe that this cost should be considered not only as the associated cost, as a currency exchange, importation costs, administrative costs, but also the kind of job that this generates. The learning, the new possibilities that are open by knowing how to make these posts. In any case, we also ask ourselves if it's cheaper to buy them outside. Why is it cheaper if in Mexico we have a lot of steel? And whether we want to keep the situation like this. A similar case as the posts is of the mattresses with the nose that we see down here. These are used in microbiology labs in order to cultivate bacteria and to measure the population density of bacteria. And in a similar manner to what I'm telling you, if we want to buy this equipment in Mexico, we have to pay about 4,000 pesos for each one, counting the import expenses and transportation costs. Yeah, so it's about 4,000 pesos in total, bringing them from the U.S. However, recently we found out that they can be fabricated in a university lab in the chemistry faculty of this university, and it's about 10 times cheaper than importing them. And all that we found outside of this lab, they were imported. In both cases, we can think about the situation. We could think about this problem of making things here or buying them from outside, because we have capable people and creative people that can solve these problems. In both cases also, we learn or we can speculate that sometimes immediately it might be cheaper to import things, Maybe with the posts it's like that, but we should think not only in these isolated cases, but we have to think about this as a common practice in the long term. In contrast with this kind of equipments and materials and techniques that are very expensive, especially when they're imported, we want to take the example of a scientific technique which is accessible and which can even be elaborated locally. Here you see, for example, these papers that I'm going to talk about in an office. There is no special characteristic of this office to be able to make these papers there. And these are these chromatographies, this paper chromatography. Chromatography is a method to separate one complex substances, which in this case allows to visualize qualitatively some of the properties related to the quality of the ground. So what you do is you take a ground sample, you dissolve it, and you put it in this paper, in a filter paper, in such a way that you generate these patterns in which each region of this chromatography, we can see different aspects of the soil. And in general, chromatography tells us about the quality of a soil, for example, through the content of organic material, microorganisms, disponibility of nutrients, etc. This technique can be elaborated, as I was mentioning, in almost home labs for about 40 or 50 pesos each. And it's so accessible and so useful to do follow-up to agricultural practices. This has been adopted by the Sin Tierra movement in Brazil, for example, to monitor their work in recovered lands. Here we see, for example, that the image of this chromatography is in paper. It's very different in similar soils, depending on the management of those soils. If there is a reincorporation of organic materials, chromatographies look more like the one on the left, and if the usage is more intensive, it looks more like the one on the right. It's important to mention that these chromatographies have been widely used as an appropriate technique developed by technicians, by scientists and peasants in agroecology. Agroecology has a long history, but we'll talk a bit about the case of Cuba, as what I think is an inspiring case in terms of generating a technology and methods and practices which are from the local. In Cuba, after the fall of the Soviet Union, there was a post-oil scene in which the dependency from agricultural products from abroad made a very difficult situation for Cuba, leading to a scarcity in the availability of food. As a response to this situation and retaking peasant knowledge from the island, they developed this technical and scientific knowledge in many levels of abstraction and concretion, and in the hands of university cooperatives, peasants, technicians, cooperatives, etc. These practices, these agroecological practices, include, for example, the chromatographies we were talking about before. They've been developed in an urban and suburban aspect and in rural places as well. They imply techniques of conservation of seeds and monitoring techniques which are a bit more elaborate, like I was mentioning before, like chromatography. And this production, this agroecological production in Cuba gives rise to healthier food. It's not subject to financial interest and international pressures, and it's associated to a more sustainable food production, which helps maintain soils, water, and biodiversity. Another example that we want to mention has to do what we were mentioning at the beginning about communication means, also as a necessary basis for development of scientific research. The advancements of scientific research are communicated mainly through scientific papers in specialized journals, in which publication is usually peer-reviewed. This is one of the main ways of communication among scientists and technologists. This implies also, beyond communication, these journals and the capacity of making them and editing, they need software, means of storing information, design strategies, edition, and peer review management, which we scientists do freely. An important thing is that the guidelines of these journals, of what they publish, what they consider relevant and not, this affects, or this is established as guidelines in scientific research in general. It is interesting that despite the internet, actually mostly journals are now published in journals which are property of a few editorial companies with costs that are usually considerable. And we'll talk about this a bit. These journals are frequently charging universities or the authors for publishing. And they promise that they will promote articles and communicate them, and that they will be in the top place in science. And they also charge universities and readers for access to articles. And many of these journals have the rights for the articles that they publish. With respect to charges, readers would cost us, in average, about 600 pesos to read one article in these journals. The authors can be charged up to 40,000 or 50,000 pesos for publishing an article, depending on the journal. This can be constructed by a rough calculation of the National University. Per researcher, they spent an average per researcher, the university spends about 27,000 pesos for publication costs. In the same year, in 2016, National University paid about 320 million pesos for subscriptions to journals, which is approximately four times the amount of the scientific coordination of UNAM spends in this. This situation leads to different initiatives, well, to a general upset among those of us who make science. And so there have been initiatives to even boycott some editorial houses, like Elsevier, for example, who publishes these magazines, these journals here. One of the boycotts that has been very famous was this one, named the cost of knowledge, which asks us scientists how much we pay for our own work. Besides, this particular boycott had its basis not only in the costs, which are exaggerate and we think they're unfair in most of these editorial houses, but also editorial houses like this same one, Elsevier, have been supporting laws in the U.S. that criminalize the free flow of knowledge in the internet. In contrast with the situation, we want to talk about two initiatives. One of them, the first one that we'll talk about, is known as Sci-Hub, and the other is called Scopit Archives. Imagine that we do a search in this very well-known journal, the Nature journal, about Mexico and diabetes. And we want to know which articles have been published about this topic. So we find a series of publications that we see here. And let's suppose that we're interested in reading this one here about mortality in Mexico and diabetes. So we try to access it, and what the website tells us is that from my house I cannot access this because I don't have a subscription to this journal. But if I pay $199 for a subscription, then I can read the article. this is a lot more than what I can pay, given the amount of articles that we need to read, and we think that this is unfair. We can try and see what happens in Sci-Hub. Sci-Hub is a repository which has a lot of scientific articles available, in which we can put the link to the article that we're looking for and search for it. And here we see that we can access the full article that we wanted to read, and we see that in fact it was just a small note. This below here, it's just a paragraph, and we would have to pay $200 to read this. Nowadays, Sci-Hubs has tens and millions of scientific papers, and a recent publication reports that these articles have been downloaded by scientists from all the world, and mainly by scientists in developing countries. So Elsevier, that we've been mentioning before, they have sued the Kazakhi scientist that founded this website. And the website has been constantly moving from a domain, and it receives support only through encrypted ways. So Alexandra Elvakian, in response to this suit from Elsevier, the student and scientist who created this, has said that editorials have been suing her, even though their contribution to publication of articles is minimal, which are essentially donated by scientists, and that this is an illegal suit because it violates the 17th article of the Human Rights Declaration that recognizes the right to share knowledge and its benefits. Another interesting experience is of this online editorial of digital books that we know as Copit. This editorial has a catalog. It's been working for 10 years, and it has a wide article in many topics, in complexity sciences, transdisciplinary science, but also literature, and diverse topics. Something interesting about this editorial is that it's based in a public education, and all the editorial work is done by scientists paid by this university, so they don't charge either the readers or the authors. On the other hand, books can be downloaded freely online, and this allows to communicate them widely around the world. One of our favorite books here is this one by Richard Levins, in which he talks about how scientists can work in and outside of academia in order to transform the world. This effort of Copit is also fed by other collective efforts of software development, which try to avoid privatization of knowledge. People who publish these books retain all the rights on their works. It's worth mentioning that in the experience of Sci-Hub and Copit are inspiring us and guiding us. They're showing us experiences that can be helpful to think how to develop our own technical basis and communication means for scientific development. However, these kind of efforts have costs and frequently face directly against capital. Some of the costs are, for example, that the creator of Sci-Hub cannot let her location be known, and the guys that have worked for 10 years in Copit are not receiving any stimulus, any work or academic stimulus to keep doing this. On the contrary, this kind of efforts are sometimes seen as something that it's not worth working on. So from all these experiences and other examples and cases that we know, we think that we can that we can contribute some things, some experiences to share, but above all, many questions that we want to pose to this community. As questions that we think are interesting to keep working on, we see that technique and communication means are an integral part of scientific development. However, now places like Mexico, these techniques and means are very fragile, and they're depending of what's developed and generated abroad. We ask ourselves if this has to be this way, and we see experiences of popular sciences like this of chromatographies and some other echo techniques and appropriated knowledges, and experiences as COPIT, Sci-Hub, Science for the People, or many others, and we ask ourselves what can we learn from them, what works and what doesn't. We see that this reflection, these experiences, reflecting about them is very important. With respect to communication means, we think it's worth asking who are our co-workers, how we communicate with them, why and how we want to publish. In general, we think, or we ask ourselves, if the separation between technique and science makes easier turning science into a product and making scientists consumers of technology, and whether it's worth to construct our own posts and equipment, even if it's more expensive than buying them. Is it worth reproducing something that is already made? Making science and technology means having the most sophisticated equipments that we need to buy. In other aspects, we talk about sovereignty, for example, food sovereignty, not only as the right of a people to eat, but also to have access to us, not only as the right to eat and have access to a certain amount of calories, but also to decide what they eat, how they produce it, and how they distribute it, among many other things. We can also talk about autonomy and sovereignty of science, can we? Can we aspire to a universal scientific knowledge with all its technical aspects? What would this mean? What would we need to reach this? With this, we want to thank our compañeros with whom we have talked about these topics, and we have given us some sources and data, and to the organizers of this Consciences, and have allowed us to reflect about these topics and to keep working on this. Thank you very much. Thank you.